New Zealanders want and deserve a transparent and comprehensive inquiry into the COVID-19 response, not another whitewash. That's why RCR is bringing you a special segment aimed at examining the terms of reference, as well as what the country's best and brightest minds believe should be put on the table and why. The inquiry sessions will endeavour to unpack everything we already know and all the things we still don't know about how the COVID response was handled and what needs to be included in any new inquiry so that New Zealanders can get answers, justice and a future free from government overreach. Welcome to the inquiry sessions.
Carrying on with the inquiry sessions here on the Up Your Brave show for Reality Check Radio, I'm talking today to Rebecca Caro about her experience with international travel restrictions while trying to visit her sick mother in the UK. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, Natalie.
Basically, I'm going to leave the floor open to you. We would love to know, how was your experience? Like, what happened and how did it play out for you?
So my mum was one of the very first COVID victims in the UK. It was a known thing, and the British government locked down after the New Zealand government. So she caught it, we don't know where, maybe a dinner party, maybe when she was volunteering at the village shop. Anyway, she was picked up, taken to hospital by people in, you know, full PPE, which we'd never seen. And my sister was excitedly showing us photographs of people in her bedroom wearing PPE. And we just thought she had got pneumonia, which she'd had before. And the end of the story is she died. It took her a very long time to die. She was in intensive care for at least 2 weeks and then transferred into a palliative care unit. And throughout that time, the lockdown in New Zealand started. And so it very quickly was apparent that I couldn't travel to the UK. And then during that time, the UK also locked down, and the rules there about visiting. So even if I could have traveled, I probably couldn't have seen her. The rules while she was in intensive care was no visitors at all. Right. And if the staff on the ward had enough time, they would take her iPad and connect it to us. And, you know, we would be able to communicate. And she was quite good. And, you know, even while she was quite sick, she was still kind of sending us emails or replying to emails. And then when she was actually then in palliative care, one visitor was allowed. And again, they hadn't even invented this thing about shared bubbles. So we were all supposed to be isolating from each other. I have three siblings in the UK. They all live in different houses in different towns. And so one of them lives in my mom's house or very close. And so my brother came down from his place and he was the nominated one to go into the hospital. But like, he was supposed to live in my mom's house, socially distanced completely from my sister and her kids. So it was all a little bit high, intense pressure.
Yeah.
On their just sort of practicality side. Meanwhile, of course, I'm sitting here in New Zealand feeling helpless.
And that was also in the early days, right, where a lot of people were genuinely scared and nervous about the virus. So I imagine that added to the stress.
It did. We just did not understand what it was, how it was communicated. There wasn't even any talk of a vaccine. It was just wear masks, don't breathe on anybody, and whatever you do, you know, stay away from everybody else. And it was very unnerving, was my key recollection. And then I was like, you know, getting phone calls in the middle of the night, because of course the UK is a different time zone from us. And so really disrupted sleep with, you know, ongoing anxiety the whole time.
And so you couldn't go, they were there. I'm going to ask a really personal question that I'm apologizing in advance I didn't ask you before we clicked record. What did they say, or what do you believe was the cause of death? Was it actually quote unquote COVID, or were there other complications?
No, it was definitely COVID. My mum was an incredibly healthy 81-year-old. As I said, she had had pneumonia before, but she had no what they called underlying symptoms. She was also a medical doctor. So the way she was treated by the staff was amazing because they basically let her into the medical conversations. So she was fully cognizant about what the care options were. So she happened to really dislike enclosed spaces. And so when she got put into the PAP mask, which is the full face breathing mask, you know, the sort of claustrophobic feelings for her would have been very strong. And, you know, we were talking about this, you know, and she stuck with a PAP mask for days when we kind of knew that she would really have disliked that feeling. But she understood the medical side and the importance of keeping her blood oxygen saturation levels up. And it was because they were falling and her body seemed unable to cope with that. And of course, in those days, we didn't yet know about some of the drugs that are now very effective at helping people. So no, I'm convinced she was a COVID death.
Were you not able to Zoom with her at all, you personally, because you couldn't go in like your siblings?
Well, nobody could go in.
Nobody could go in at all.
In palliative care, she was pretty much unconscious the whole time. Right. So no one could go in when she was in intensive care. And yes, we did share some Zooms. But again, it was hard to arrange because you never knew when the nursing staff would have, you know, a spare however many minutes to get to her, to get her to unlock her iPad and then to, you know, click to connect to one of us. So we did do that. And we did record them, but it was, you know, I had no idea what that ward was like, and none of us did. We had no idea how many patients were on there. We had no idea how many staff were on there. We do know that they were incredibly patient and took phone calls at the front desk and did their best with us. But for all we know, they were getting calls from every single patient's family.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my heart goes out to you for the fact that you couldn't be there. You couldn't fly and be there in person with her. I just can't imagine not being able to do that. How did the rest of it, what flowed on from that in terms of you being able to go over there? I know you also had an MIQ experience. I think that was upon return, maybe.
I was able to go over a year later. So she died in April and the following June, July, so 2021, I was able to book flights and get a space in MIQ. If you recall, it was at the time that Australia and New Zealand bubbled together.
Yeah.
And people who'd been traveling in and out of Australia didn't need to do MIQ. So unlike so many other people, I actually had a choice of dates to return to and to book the MIQ because they wouldn't let you... They wouldn't confirm your flights returning to New Zealand unless you had an MIQ space. So for me, actually, that was very straightforward. And I booked the flights myself. I didn't even need a travel agent to help me with that.
So you were able to get back in. So you were able to go over, see your siblings, go through that process, and then come back in. And did you actually have to do the MIQ?
Yes, I did. So when I went over, when she actually was buried, you were only allowed six people in person. So it was like the vicar, my three siblings, my mom's sister and her husband, and that was it. And then they did a live stream for me, which was brilliant. And we did a vigil in her garden the night before, which was lovely. But we then decided just to have, I wanted to go and do a memorial service. My mom was very gregarious, had lots of friends, and I come from a large family. So, you know, we also have lots of relatives. And by the time a year had passed, you still were not allowed gatherings of more than, I think, 20 people. So it wasn't really an option. We wouldn't have felt we were giving her a good send-off. So my siblings and I, we had a sort of private session at her graveside together. When I got back to MIQ, I was in Rotorua. And the worst bit is you come off a very long flight. You know, it's two back-to-back 12-hour flights if you've never flown to the UK. And then you don't even go out the front of the airport. They took us down the back from, you went through passport control. And then instead of going down to collect our luggage, we went out a different door, out the back and straight into some waiting coaches, which took us first to Hamilton where they drove us into this enclosure at Hamilton Airport where they kind of like fenced it off. There were five portaloos and we were each given a doggy bag of food. Okay. And then they drove us on to Rotorua, and they dealt with us really well. We were extremely well looked after. I had a colossal room with two double beds in it. Sadly, the room next door was a family of four in the same available space, and I really felt for them. But, you know, you get a little bit institutionalized, but I coped with the MIQ. My husband drove down and we yelled at each other across the street.
Remind me how long it was for? Was it like 3 weeks?
Two weeks. Luckily, the Olympics was on. And I basically bought a subscription to watch it live. And I just, while you're doing that, you know, that jet lag thing when you wake up in the middle of the night, I was like, oh, let's get on and see what's happening in the hockey or whatever was on at the Olympics. So I distracted myself more than adequately for those 2 weeks.
Well, it's good to hear also, because in the COVID inquiry, I'm hearing from a range of people, mandated nurses, mandated teachers, et cetera, et cetera. But it's good to hear what I'm hearing from you is that the experience for you was pretty smooth sailing, all things considered, in terms of the travel, even though you couldn't go over and see your mom, which was absolute travesty. But in terms of the rest of it, you were well taken care of as such. What are your thoughts on that?
Very much so. And, you know, although staffed by mostly military people, they were brilliant. We were allowed to exercise outside. There was a moment when it was raining and I was the only person outside walking and jogging around this little part of the car park. And I took my mask off and the chief, who was like a major or something, came down and said, really sorry, you must put your mask on. I'm like, I'm the only person here. Even your guard has gone inside because it's raining. And they were like, you can imagine like the CCTV would have been like following me around. But anyway, I just laughed it off because, you know, I wanted the exercise more than I wanted to wear the mask.
Did it feel kind of surreal? Like to me, when you're explaining it to me, you know, and we all got off and we went to the Portaloos with our little doggy bag, like it feels like a scene from a movie. I mean, did it feel surreal to you at the time?
It felt worse than surreal. It felt a combination of prison and this is so weird. I sort of can't believe it's happening. But of course, very sleep deprived, coming off a flight as well, a long flight, and unbelievably grumpy that I wasn't in an Auckland hotel. I was like, oh no, I have to go to Rotorua. I mean, nothing wrong with Rotorua. And you know, I had a probably much larger, nicer room. It had a spa bath, for heaven's sake. It had views out over the race course. You saw people exercising their horses and walking their dogs. I mean, it was not a bad place to have to spend 2 weeks in. It's just that, you know, accumulated sleep deprivation makes you rather irrational and emotional.
All right. Well, going forward, you know, now we are coming up to 4 years on from that. And I'm sure you're aware, you've probably just had coming up to the anniversary. So how are things for you now? What does life look like? You know, were there lessons learned? Have you had some other, you know, blessings or silver linings come out of this whole experience?
I'm not sure about lessons learned, but, you know, life lessons from being taught patience is probably always a good thing. I'm much closer to my brothers and sisters. We're in touch very, we have a cycle of regularity of catching up, which is lovely, which I really enjoy. Some of the lovely things that have happened, in common with a lot of other places around the world, Britain decided to do a COVID memorial for, I think they call it, people of all religion or none. And it's inside St. Paul's Cathedral in the centre of London. They did a big fundraiser to raise enough money to build this. And it's at an entranceway on the side of the cathedral. And you walk in and there's a circular room with beautiful wood panelling. And around the ceiling in gold letters, it explains that it's the COVID memorial. And then in the middle of it, there are a lot of TV screens where you can upload your own memories about your loved ones who suffered or died. It is designed for people who died. And it was special in so many ways, but particularly my brother works as the cathedral architect for St. Paul's Cathedral. And so he was asked to get up and be one of the very first people to register a loved one in the memorial. And he also designed the space and made it into this, just, it's just a beautiful, intimate contemplation space where you could imagine people who aren't religious wouldn't necessarily want to go into a cathedral. You kind of don't feel like you're going in. It's like an atrium. You go in through these doors, and then to get into the cathedral, there are more doors. So it's very much a place where anyone can come and maybe open their heart for themselves and to appreciate their loved ones and to memorialize them in a gentle way that's not pushy. And so for me, that was a very nice, I suppose, personal, positive blessing.
Well, that sounds like a fitting tribute. And it is so important for people to acknowledge what they've been through and to come together and share or express some of their views. So that is a beautiful thing. One final thing before we wrap up. How has it been on your business in the past few years?
It was an interesting time. I work for myself. And when COVID hit, half of my clients said, carry on, and half said, stop work immediately. And so, in fact, that was fine, because the ones that did carry on were and are delightful, and we work well together. It freed me up, obviously, to focus my attention overseas in those early months. And then what's happened, interestingly, as a result of that, just before COVID, I had a contract on the table to take a full-time position with a company called Datamine. And now here we are 4 years later, and I'm now 4 months into a contract working with Datamine. So that was a very nice and most unexpected outcome, because I was really looking forward to working with them. Mm-hmm. And they were, of course, one of the ones who said, oh, no, stop, we're not taking on, you know, new staff at this time. Right. And it's worked out brilliantly for me.
Well, it was obviously meant to happen, and divine timing, hopefully. Well, thank you, Rebecca, for sharing some of your journey with us today.
Thank you, Natalie.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Keeping the COVID inquiry honest, it's time for the inquiry sessions.